Good morning, everyone. I'd like to try to go through today, if the time allows us, eight short points about Hanukkah, as was called, eight delights for eight nights. Some of them are in regard to the minhagim of Hanukkah, some of the halachos, and some maybe we'll introduce some new minhagim if not all familiar with them. Some of them will be more familiar, some of them might be new. So the first thing I'd like to discuss is the halacha, which is actually right in the beginning of Shulchan Aruch and Hilchas Chanukah. The Shulchan Aruch records, the Shulchan Aruch brings down, V'noyegayis Hanoshim, the minig of the women is, Shalasas Melacha Ba'oishan Eres Dalkos, the minig of women, they do not do any work while the candles are burning. I'm reading the Shulchan Aruch, it's on the sheets, V'yesh Misha Aymer, there are those that say, She'ein Lahaka Lahem. And we do not allow any leniency in this matter. That's the opinion of the Shulchan Aruch, that the custom is the women don't do work while the candles are burning. And the reason for this is, as the Mishnah Berurah and the Pesukim explained, because there was an ikar part of Hanukkah, the story with Yehudis, which we won't go into now at great length, but it was a great story with Yehudis, how she really chopped off the head of one of the generals, and because of that, the Maccabim were able to be victorious in much of their battle, and to recognize the importance of women in the Nes of Hanukkah, so we give the women a special time off as the candles are burning. Now, Mishnah Berurah makes this clear. This doesn't mean the whole night. Let's say this person, you know, buys extra long candles. That doesn't get the women off for work for 5 hours. It's only for the time of the mitzvah, which would be the half hour. So, however, what's not clear in the Mishnah Berurah and the Pesukim in the Shulchan Aruch is what can't they do? We use the word melacha. Melacha has many connotations, literally translated as work. There's melacha Shabbos, which are basically, you know, we're all familiar with from Shabbos. There's also malacha, which we don't do on Chol HaMoed, which is a much less severe category. And there's other minhagim of malacha. So when the poskim say here that the custom is that women don't do malacha, what is included in this category? And there's this a great discussion in the contemporary poskim. So the first source on the sheets, source number one, is the Chuvas Rivas Ephraim from Ephraim Greenblatt Zatzal. And there he quotes different opinions. He first quotes from his friend Rav Yaakov Yisrael Fisher, who was Dayan Fisher, the head of the Eidah Haredis in Eretz Yisrael, in Yerushalayim. And he said that the minig in Yerushalayim is that the women do not do any work at all. They don't cook any work at all because we want to make sure that one of the reasons, he says, is to ensure that we don't have any hishtamshus, any use from, or get any benefit from the lights of Hanukkah, and therefore we want the women to sit on the couch and just relax, and for that time of a half hour, nothing should be done at all. That's according to Diane Fisher. He then writes later on that from the name of Rav Heinemann Shlita from Baltimore, that it's not as intense as that. The Isser Malacha is things similar to Chol HaMoed. Things which on Chol HaMoed, we don't do any excessive work on Chol HaMoed, but things which are necessary, like cooking, are mutter on Chol HaMoed. So too, during this time, cooking would be allowed as well. And I saw this a similar idea expressed in the name of Moshe Feinstein Zatzal as well, that it's not as intense as Diane Fisher was saying, that the minig is they don't do anything at all. And the way the River Safraim concludes, he says, V'im Kain, the last place where it's underlined, Yesh Lahakil, we could be lenient. Umishamach Mayachalat, so someone wants to take the strict approach that is allowed, but you cannot say that's obligatory. Similarly, maybe even a little more lenient, in source 2 is the Sefer Kovetz Halachos, which is from Shmuel Kamenetsky Shlita, and he as well says that the Geder, the framework for this minig of not doing malacha, is in order that women shouldn't lose sight of the Nes of Hanukkah. If they're going to be busy that whole time doing regular household chores or any other things that'll kind of take them, distract them from the Nes of Hanukkah. And therefore, he says, regular cooking or even writing would not fall into this category. He says even to push on the washing machine wouldn't be a problem. Basically, they shouldn't be involved in anything which is going to be too tedious or too mindful to take them away from the Nes of Hanukkah. Any small household chores, he says, is permissible as well. Interestingly, in source 3 from Shlomo Zalman Orbach, so Shlomo Zalman that first recorded that he said that the halacha is like the Ben Ishchai writes, which we'll get to in a minute, that whatever the women don't do on Rosh Chodesh, there is a custom recorded as well that women don't do work on Rosh Chodesh, and there particularly means to sewing or other things that are more women-like type of jobs. He says that's the same minig for Hanukkah, but then the Talmidim of Rav Shlomo Zalman bring down that Rav Shlomo Zalman's custom himself in his own house was, like we said before, from Dayan Fisher, who was the Dayan of Yerushalayim, that the minig in Yerushalayim was, they didn't do any malacha, no cooking, cleaning, baking, laundry, any of that stuff, during for the half hour of when the candles, the first half hour when the candles are burning. However, This is an interesting sidebar. Even though Rav Shlomo Zalman had that minig in his house, if the women at that point wanted to fry up the donuts or the latkes for the Chanukah Suda, that was allowed. Because, you know, that's the mitzvah hayayim, so to speak. That's the main enjoyment of that night's dinner. So there he allowed it, although for, I guess, other cooking, I don't know exactly what together is, he frowned upon. And to conclude this idea, in source number 4, the Ben Ish Chai as well, in the beginning, writes that the minig of women not to do work during the time the candles were burning is like Rosh Chodesh, and that's how he paskined for his congregation in Baghdad. He was the rabbi in Baghdad in his day. But then he quotes something very interesting. He says, first he says, that's only for women who are doing small chores. He says, V'osam ha-nashem, for those women, she-parnasasam ay-dei malacha, who are actually working for a livelihood to make a parnasa, ain lahachar b'zeh, don't impose this stringency upon them. So if a woman has a regular 9-to-5 job, so to speak, or anything of that type of nature, he would allow it to be done during this time period. And then he says, he sent a question to a Rav, Mani, I'm not sure who this is, a Rav in Yerushalayim in his day, a Sephardic Rav, and asked him, what's the custom in Yerushalayim in these days of Hanukkah? Could women do malacha or not? So Rav Mani told him, keep in mind he's a Sephardi Rav, and we said before we started with the Shulchan Aruch, who's the one, Shulchan Aruch is the Beis Yosef, the Sephardim, who said that that's the minig, women don't do malacha. But it seemed to have been in these days of Rav Mani, the Ben Ish Chai is recording, that Rav Mani told him, the minig Yerushalayim is the women do malacha. They're not makbar on this minig at all. So I'm just showing another extreme that Rav Dayan Fisher from the Eid HaRedi said in his day, the minig of women was not to any malacha at all. Approximately 100 years before that, the Sephardi Rabbanim in Yerushalayim said the minig was that women did do malacha, but he added one last point. He said, Amnam, it's about 3-4 lines from the bottom in source 4. He says, Amnam, Yeshlam Kabbalah, the women have a tradition, Shem Isha Nafla B'Sakana, if a woman has something, a particular hardship, or some danger that looming over her, Tidar Neder, she should make a promise, Shalasus Malacha B'Chanukah, she should not do any work on Chanukah, and that'll be a segula for a Tinatzel, she'll be saved from whatever danger is looming over. So it's a good school to keep in your back pocket. If God forbid a woman has some challenge that during Chanukah, if she's extra strict in this minig, according to Rav Mani that the Ben Ish Chai is quoting, it's a school for her to be successful whenever she needs.
So there's two different reasons. One of them is because you shouldn't be mishtamish lor anir.
Correct.
In Israel. And the other one seems to be because you don't be masir from the nais. There's nothing to do with the candles.
Right.
So masir from the nais means even I'm in a different room.
Think about it.
Except there's no light here.
Right. Right. So that could be right.
Not necessarily the malacha, but like just reading a book.
Reading a book should okay.
You know, you're distracted.
Fine. Okay. Fair enough. You're right. That is a lashon of that is two common themes in the Pesukim. What is the main thing, right? If it's a zechar nes to remember Ma'aseh of Yehudis and the fact that the women played a central role in the nes of Chanukah, or is that we don't want anybody to use the candles? Just for example, just to expand upon what you're saying for a minute, if you go with the second logic, that the point is we want to make sure the women don't get any benefit from the Chanukah candles, so it shouldn't be women. No, but it shouldn't be women per se. It should even extend to the men. Why are we only worried about the women getting the benefit? Even men can't get benefit from the Chanukah candles, right? But if we're worried about the first reason, then we're commemorating the miracle of the women, that they were made that would be exclusive for women. Okay, but I want to cover 7 other points, so maybe we can discuss this more later. So that's point number 1, the basic idea of the minig, that women don't do malacha. Point number 2 is a common custom, which starts in source number 5, a common custom we're all familiar with during Chanukah, to play with the dreidel. So first, a little historical background. This is from the Sefer Eitzer Kol Minhaga Yeshurin, the a compilation of many of the Minhagim of the Ashkenazim. It's interesting that mostly, primarily, the Ashkenazic sources are the Hasidic ones are the sources for the minig of dreidel. Seems to be, at least written, the Sfardim don't seem to have this recorded as a minig. I don't know what the Sfardim play with on Chanukah, but it doesn't seem to be brought so much in the Sephardic Sfarim. But here, this Sefer, he records the basic story many of us are familiar with, that during the Nes of Chanukah, one of the decrees of the Yevanim, as we say in the Alanisim Tefillah, is the Greeks were lahashkicham torasecha. They wanted to erase from us or stop us from learning Torah. And of course, the Jews can't be separated from the books. They don't want to be stopped learning Torah. So they used to gather in these secret groups to learn Torah. Now keep in mind, this is before things were written down, so everything was baal peh. They were sitting just in a group and discussing Torah thoughts by heart, or with a chumash or something like that, but didn't have a whole library like we have today. And anytime there was a threat of some Greeks passing by, they would quickly all whip out of their pocket the dreidels and look like they're just playing a nice fun game. That's the typical source for this minig. It's not recorded, though, what was written on their dreidels. We know we have Nun, Gimel, Hei, Shin, which we'll get to shortly. You know, those are letters on the dreidel, but that can only be post the story. That couldn't be during the Nes of Chanukah. What was written on the dreidel, your guess is as good as mine. I don't know, and I don't know the rules they play with at that time either. But that's the basic source for the minig of dreidel. Although this seems to be primarily a child's game, nonetheless, in source 6, the Tshuva's Divrei Yatzeh, which is from the Kloisenberger Rebbe, brings down, he said just very agav, he says, just says it like, you know, by the way, the minig is we play dreidel, and so was the minig by Avoseinu HaKadoshim. It doesn't mean the forefather, it doesn't mean Avraham Yitzchak and Yaakov, he means the previous great Hasidic masters played with the dreidel as well. And Hanukkah, I saw this brought down in other Sfarim as well. It doesn't mean they were busy all 8 days playing dreidel, but they wanted to, at some point, they took out a dreidel on Hanukkah to show this is the minig, and it wasn't just a child's game. And we'll get to in a moment, maybe some remuzim, some hints to in the dreidel itself. And he just says a little further in that paragraph in source 6, it says, V'yei Shlomar, Shebizman Hayivonim, in the times of the Greeks, people were not able to be most in Nefesh. You know, it was a very hard time for the Jewish people. Really, they should have went out in full force and said, we're not listening to you. We're going to study Torah even in public, open areas. But instead, they developed this game to hide what they were doing. It wasn't just for Torah. He says, U'kishayim es'asvim b'Shabbos, because also the Greeks, one of the things they decreed against was us practicing Shabbos. So we'd gather some Shabbos Suda or some Shabbos to get together, or the Bris Milah, or they would gather at a Bris Milah circumcision for a young child as well, which the Greeks decreed against, says the Kloisenberger Rebbe. At that time also they played dreidel. So we're expanding it not just for Torah, but the point is it existed for all these ways to kind of put a facade or block the Greeks from really catching what we were doing. That's all a little bit of a historical background. But in source 7, the Sefer Tameim and Hagim, he explains an interesting question. You don't really think of it until someone points it out to you. We have the two rabbinic Yom Tovim that we have are Hanukkah and Purim. Each one comes with a specific toy, so to speak, associated with it. On Hanukkah we have the dreidel, and on Purim we have the grogger. Okay, very nice, very cute. We're all familiar with it. But they work differently. The dreidel we spin on top, unless you're spinning it upside down, but typically the dreidel goes on top, and a grogger we spin from underneath. Why was that? Why, you know, it's not arbitrary that we have all these minhagim, so why did it come to be that the dreidel we spin on top and the grogger we spin from underneath, from the bottom? So the Sefer Tameim and Hagim wants to explain that the Bechanaka, on the story of Chanukah, lo hoisa his oirus milamata. We don't find in Chazal, they told us that the Klal Yisrael joined together for any anmas tshuva movement, or any anmas tefillah, or tainus, or any fasting, or anything like that. It was all, like we say in Alanisim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was rafta es rivam, danta es dinam. He fought the wars for us. He, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so to speak, just jumped straight in. Of course, there were the rewards, the makamim were victorious, but it was 100% purely miraculous. Nothing that we could have done really, nothing that we did as a nation that really showed any type of general big tshuva movement. As opposed to Purim, we know Mordechai decreed 3 days of fast. The Jewish people were fasting, they were davening, all types of things we did down below to arouse HaKadosh Baruch Hu's rachmanis upon us, and we were in Baruch Hashem, it worked out, and we were saved. So Hanukkah, we spin the dreidel from on top to show that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so to speak, just stuck his hand straight down from Shemayim and helped us out. The Isra Usa de la Eila, the help just came straight down from above. As opposed to Purim, we're showing that we first needed to do the actions of the tshuva, tefillah, and tzedakah, Isra Usa de la Tata, from what it's what's called in Aramaic, the help from down below. We started down below, and then HaKadosh Baruch Hu, of course, sent us the Yeshua. So just an interesting thing, you know, think about the... if you see someone spinning the dreidel upside down, maybe this Hanukkah, tell him he's doing it the wrong way. You got to spin the dreidel only right side up. That's the minig.
You're not yotze.
Right, maybe not yotze. All right. Perhaps. I don't know.
And this comes from this...
He's giving this idea, this thought, machshava, about why this developed. You know, it's just it was a cute remez to how the nes happened in Hanukkah and how the nes happened in Purim.
Another central problem, gambling.
Oh, we'll get to that in a moment. Hold on. Gambling, we'll get to in a moment. So in source number 8, from the Sefer Imre Pinchas, which was Rav Pinchas Mikaritza, one of the main Talmidim of the Baal Shem Tov, my maternal grandfather was a descendant of the Imre Pinchas, he writes, not only is Nun Gimel Hei Shin, the four letters of the dreidel, of course stands for, the familiar one is Neis Gadol Hayah Sham, there was a great miracle that happened there, but he would say that it comes to hint us as well, the main two mitzvahs of Chanukah, which is Neiros Shmone, Nun Shin, Neiros Shmone, we have 8 candles we light on Hanukkah, and Halal Gomer, we say the whole Halal. We thank Hashem. We don't say the abridged version of Halal, like we say in Rosh Chodesh. We say the whole Halal, so that's the two main mitzvahs of Chanukah, which is Hallel, thanking Hashem, and lighting the menorah, is hinted to in the four letters of the dreidel. Again, Nes, Nun Shin will be Ner Shmona, the eight candles, and Hey Gimel will be Hallel Gomor. Then he says, just like we know, the Chazal tell us there are Ayin Panim LaTorah, there are 70 ways to understand the various facets of Torah, so too we have to be able to accept there are 70 mahalchim, there are 70 ways perhaps to understand each and every minig, and we have to accept each one. Keep this in mind, for we'll discuss something else later, but this idea that every minig could have numerous sources for it. And he concludes another great remez in the four letters of Nun Gimel Hei Shin is the same gematria as Mashiach, to always, as a good Jew, we're always looking forward. Everything somehow ties into Mashiach, just like we were zochah in the days of the miracle of Chanukah to great salvation. So Nun Gimel Hei Shin, we should bring Mashiach speedily in our days through the dreidel. Now, to get back to a little bit to what Ramiel asked before, I don't want to spend a lot of time on it, but in source number 9, which is on page 4, he asks a question. This is from the Sefer Leket She'elas HaMetzuyos, a collection of common questions. It's compiled by Rav Dunner from Bnei Brak, a contemporary author. And he brings here, is it mutter to play dreidel on Shabbos? So there's two questions that are going to come up here. Number one, a muktzah question, and number two, gorolos, or raffling or gambling, as we call it in English. Why are those two problems unique over here? There is a specific prohibition, even if it's not gambling in the gambling sense, of making a gorol, making a raffle on Shabbos. It's based on a Gemara and Shabbos. The basic idea is here, we're afraid that you're going to come to Mecca Chumemka, we're afraid you're going to come to write things down on Shabbos. It's Aser Midrabanan. That's the basic Isser. And therefore, a father, even in his own household, many poskim say, should not make a raffle on Shabbos to give out various portions if they're not all the same size. Meaning, if they're all the same size, you have the same exact popsicle. And the question is, which kid gets first, then you can make a raffle on which kid will get first. But if there's anything which is different of sizes, so you really, the raffle is really actually giving one person a larger portion, another person a smaller portion, some poskim frown upon that. That's a question, it's halacha unto itself. And therefore, he brings down over here that when you play dreidel on Shabbos, you should be careful that, obviously you're not playing for money on Shabbos, maybe you're playing for some jelly beans or some other item that the kids are going to be enjoying. You should not do it in a way where somebody will win a big amount and somebody will win a small amount. Let's just clarify that for a minute. If the children are playing the game in such a fashion where they'll win, but then everything just goes back, they're not actually taking away anything. Let's say you're playing with some chips or whatever, something. And then, potato chips, something like that. And then at the end of the game, everyone just cleans up the game like you play Monopoly, right? The kids play Monopoly on Shabbos. Some poskim are upset about it because it looks like you're doing business on Shabbos, but at the end of the day, everyone knows you clean up the game, everything goes back in the box and goes back on the shelf. Hopefully, the kids will clean up, right? So if dreidel is being played the same way, there's no reason necessarily to not allow the children to play that game on Shabbos, because it wouldn't be like a go roll on Shabbos. They're just playing the game. Maybe one kid won the game, so to speak. But at the end of the day, everything gets cleaned up and put back into the box. If you're playing with jelly beans or any other type of candy, and so a kid might actually walk away with 50 jelly beans and one kid might only walk away with 5 jelly beans. So two ways to avoid this problem would be that don't play with jelly beans. Another way to avoid this problem would be that even if one kid wins all jelly beans, if they then evenly distribute all of it amongst the children after the game, then it wouldn't be similar to a gorel, and everyone walks away with their 10 jelly beans and has a great Shabbos party.
What about eating the jelly beans while you're playing?
Well, then you might lose. Okay, but all right. And the dreidel itself, the poskim here say, is not muktzah because you don't have to necessarily play for any type of gambling or anything like that. Now, specifically gambling in a not Shabbos setting, if you're really playing for real big money, it might really be a problem of gambling. That is a question unto itself. I don't want to get bogged down in it. If you're just playing for pennies and nickels and dimes, in just a regular family setting, the postgame would not call that gambling and cannot ask that per se, but anytime there's real stakes on the table, that would definitely be a question of gambling, and one should consult his local Orthodox consultant rabbi for how to avoid any gambling problems. Okay, that's the issue of dreidel. Moving right along, the third topic I want to quickly speak about is different foods that we have the minhag to eat on Chanukah. So we mentioned before briefly the story of Yehudis. That was a crucial point in the Chanukah Nes. And from there, the Ramah, in the beginning of Shulchan Aruch, tells us that in Hilchas Chanukah, that the minhag is that we eat milchiks during Chanukah. You don't have to have cheese blintzes like we have on Shavuos per se. Any milchiks, any cheese item will suffice to fulfill this minig. However, what's more common, as we know, is to eat latkes. And for some reason, the Shulchan Aruch doesn't quote this minig. I don't know why. We all know it's a well-known minig. And in the source 10, from the Sefer Halicho Shlomo, which is the compilation of the students and the family members of Shlomo Zalman Orbach, they quote from a Sefer, which I'm not familiar with, but they quote it word for word here, from a Sefer called Sarid Upolit. It's a collection of various kisfaya that they found from the Rishonim. And this is quoting from the father of the Rambam, which is Rabbeinu Maimon ben Yosef. And he writes right in his days, his times of the Rishonim, going back 1,000 approximately years, that they had the custom in those days already to eat oily foods during Hanukkah, as to remember the custom, to remember the miracle that happened with the oil. And so we just see it's been around for quite some time. He says, and he writes, Ein lahalka, we should not be lenient in any such custom. All these customs that develop have a source in them in the Jewish tradition. Al titash Torah simecha. Pasuk says we should never forsake the Torah of our mother. All that means to teach us is that we should not forsake our menhagim. And therefore, this seems to be at least an ancient source, 1,000+ years at least, that this was already the custom. Rav Shlomo Zalman added, as we know, is common nowadays in Eretz Yisrael for a newer minhag. People eat sufganiyot, eat donuts. How that developed? So Rav Shlomo Zalman suggests that the way the minhag perhaps developed is that because if you eat a sufganiya, you eat a proper amount, you eat a jelly donut or any type of donut, you'll have to make an alamichya. You'll have to make that special after blessing. In alamichya, part of the nusach is we say v'al mizbachacha. We mentioned the mizbeach of the Beis HaMikdash. Interesting to note, a question on itself, is that in the regular benching, the word mizbeach does not appear. So it says of Shlomo Zalman, we want to make sure specifically saying alamichya during Chanukah, because when the Chashmonaim rededicated the Beis HaMikdash, they were able to be metaher, they purified, and they cleaned out the Beis HaMikdash. The Mizbeach, which became impure, there was a halachic problem. They weren't sure how to purify it, and they had to be nignaz, they had to put away, they had to bury the Mizbeach. They didn't have the original Mizbeach after the Nes of Chanukah. So to remember that certain part of Chanukah, we lost the Mizbeach, we want to specifically mention the Mizbeach on Chanukah. Interesting idea, and therefore, according to Shlomo Zalman, perhaps that's the reason why we have a sufganiyah. It has the oil to represent the oily part of the Nes, and we make alamichya, so it reminds us of the Mizbeach that after the Nes of Chanukah was unfortunately had to be hidden. It was nignaz and could not be used again because it became tamei, and the Chacham at that day did not know a proper way how to purify it. In source 11 on page 5, it's an interesting quote. This is from a kuntris, a little booklet that was put out. It's called Halachic Reflections on Chanukah, written by our Mordechai Tendler Shlita. And he just writes there that he was once speaking to his grandfather, Moshe Feinstein Zatzal, and Moshe was not under the impression, I guess he was not familiar with the sources we quoted before, he didn't have it, of that the Rishon already knew about this minig of latkes. And he felt that the minig just became because in Europe they always ate potatoes. That was a staple, that was a regular food of their diet. And in order to make the meal a little more festive on Chanukah, a little change of scenery, so to speak, for Chanukah, the minig became to make some fancier dish with the potatoes instead of just a regular boiled potato. They got some oil, they fried it up, made it a little more tasty. So it was a significance of showing something special. We're eating a different food because we're having a special meal now for Chanukah, but not necessarily you have to use a lot of oil. The oily part of it is not the significant part of it. It's the special fact that there was a different change of what we typically serve to show a chashivas for the day. And like we said before, just like every part of Torah has 70 ways to explain it, so too every minig has multiple ways to explain it. And therefore, this could be another understanding, a simple understanding of just to show a little more chashivas, importance to the meal, and instead of serving the plain old potatoes, we made it a little more sophisticated. So just take us one step further. Now we're living in America, 2016. We're Baruch Hashem much more way beyond potatoes. So we got to figure out some other type of exciting new food, and that's why perhaps nowadays the market is flooded with all types of kosher candies and stuff, special Chanukah cookies and shapes and candies and all types of things. It's because we got to be mekayim this minig in every way and have something special for Chanukah, especially the Chanukah coins. That's a special minig as well. Okay, the source number 4, get back a little more to halacha, inyan number 4, the fourth topic we can discuss today, which is in source number 12, is a question. There's a famous question of the Beis Yosef, which we will not be discussing. Of course, the famous question of the Beis Yosef is why is Chanukah 8 days if the miracle really only was 7 days? That's a great question. I would like to ask another question, which is not as popular. Why don't we have a 9th day of Chanukah? Every other Yom Tov, Shavuos, Pesach, Sukkot, we have another day because Sveika Dioma. We're in Chutz Laretz. We have an extra day of Yom Tov because we're in doubt when exactly the right date is. We should have another day of Chanukah. Why don't we find it?
We have plenty of time to notify everybody because it's the 25th of the month.
Okay, perhaps. However, the Menachas Chinuch suggests that there is a ninth day of Hanukkah. Nowadays, we don't have it. But he says the Menachas Chinuch in source number 12, I'm not going to read the whole thing inside, in the days when they were Mekadesh al Piriyah and they had to send the foot soldiers out, although you're right, they had plenty of time, but keep in mind, Hanukkah is the winter. I don't know what the weather was like back then, but I can assume that the winter was similar to what we have today, and it was could be the road conditions were more treacherous than they were Pesach time, and therefore it could be the shluchim, the messengers of the Beis Din, had a hard time traveling. They couldn't get to the far-flung Jewish communities in those days, and therefore Menachas Chinuch suggests that in the days when they were Mekadesh al Pi Re'iyah, when they had witnesses come and sanctify the new moon, giving testimony, they actually had a ninth day of Hanukkah in Chutz Laaretz. However, nowadays that we are knowledgeable in the ways of the calendar, and the only reason why we keep a Sveika Dioma, a day of Yontif extra by the other Yom Tovim, is because that was the Minig, and it's a D'Araisa Yontif, so we're going to be Machmer only in D'Araisa Yom Tovim. But in D'Rabban Yom Tovim, Menachas Chinuch suggests we do not be Machmer nowadays, and therefore, as we're all familiar, we do not have the custom today of having a ninth day of Hanukkah. But according to Menachas Chinuch, it's a chiddush that there used to be in some communities a ninth day of Hanukkah. I'm sure the silversmiths were happy because then they can add an extra candelabra onto the menorah and they'll get to make a couple extra dollars, a little more expensive menorah. In source 13, the Pri Chodesh as well deals with this question, and he suggests, different than the Menachas Chinuch, he says there was never a time where there was a Sveika Dioma on Hanukkah. He says, number one, perhaps since the whole Hanukkah is rabbinic, so Rabbanon were never matriachas, even in a time of when they were Mekadesh al Pi Re'iyah, when they sanctified the new moon with witnesses, they were never imposed upon the people to have an extra day because it's only rabbinic in nature. Or he says they simply wanted to have 8 days of Hanukkah because 8 days represents the 8 days of the Bris. And one of the things the Greeks wanted to eradicate from the Jewish people was the Bris Milah. So specifically they kept the 8 days of Hanukkah. Or he says because we wanted to make sure everyone knew that the miracle only lasted for this block of time. If people are going to be celebrating Hanukkah for 9 days, it'll be confusing for people how long the miracle actually went for. Okay, so the Pri Chodesh is obviously arguing with this idea of the Menachas Chinuch and saying they never had 9 days of Hanukkah, it was always only 8 days. In source 13 on page 6, it's from the Sefer Birchas Yaivitz, which is from David Cohen Shlita of Brooklyn, and the last paragraph there, he says, first of all, if you're going to go with this idea of the Menachas Chinuch, that there was 9 days of Hanukkah, how would you do the custom of Mahadra Min HaMahadra? We're familiar that our custom is that we do Hanukkah candles in the best way possible. Every day we add another candle. So how would you do it? You would have to have two separate menorahs. The first night, I would light one menorah and one candle. Fine. The second night, I should have to light one menorah with one candle and one menorah with two candles, because maybe tonight's the first night and maybe tonight's the second night, etc. The third night, I should light one menorah with two candles and one menorah with three candles. It would just be very confusing how many menorahs you would light. And then he suggests that there's actually an interesting question by Sfira Saomer. Why by Sfira Saomer don't we have Sveika Dioma as well? And there's a tshuva from the Dvar Avram, where he brings a raya from the sugya in Bava Metzia, that we do never, anytime you have to count something, we can't tell you to count misafik. If you're counting something, it has to be a defined number. The quantity has to be defined. So if we have to count Sfira Saomer misafik, we're not counting anything, because it's just, is it this or is it that? That's not defined. So too, when it comes to Hanukkah, for counting the days of the miracle, it always has to be a defined number. And therefore, says the Rav Dava Cohen Shlita, that will come out, if everything has to be defined, you would not be able to light two menorahs. You'd only be able to do one candle every night. Because again, the Iker Mitzvah of Hanukkah is light one candle every night. We are Machmir, like the Gemara says, we do Mahadra Min Mahadra, and we add one, two, three, etc. But the main mitzvah is one candle every night. So it would come out that if you're going to be Machmir and want to do a Sufik Dioma, an extra day of Hanukkah, you wouldn't be able to have one the first night, two the second night, etc., because you're not defined, like I said before, which night, what night of the miracle we're up to. So it would come out, you'd only be able to light one candle every night. Okay, we'll discuss this more later. Well, yeah, but Shamash doesn't count. We'll see that in a minute. Okay, another answer I once heard to this question from Rosh Yeshiva, Rav Meiselman Shlita from Taras Meish in Eretz Yisrael. He said over the name of his Rebbe Salvechik from Boston, that argues on the Menachas Chinuch as well, that there was never any idea of Sveika Dioma by Hanukkah, because Hanukkah was not a yontif which has Kedushas Hayayim. It doesn't have sanctity of the day. It's not Asar B'Malacha. It's just a commemoration of the miracle. And therefore, Chazal never instituted a Sveika Dioma on any yontif which doesn't have Kedushas Hayom. Okay, we have to move on for now. We can discuss this more later. The fifth inyan, which is source 14, is from the Beis Halevi al Torah. There is a halacha that the Gemara Paskins, it's a machlokus, but the Gemara Paskins that a Hanukkah Kavsa ein zokik lo. If the candle goes out, we do not have to relight it. Just to clarify, the halacha there is, if I light my Hanukkah menorah properly, everything is set up, the proper wicks, the proper oil, everything is good in the right place, and then some onus, something happens out of my control, my kids come and they blow it out, a wind gust come, the menorah falls, whatever happens, and it goes out. So the Gemara Paskins and the Shulchan Aruch Paskins, kufsa, if it goes out, ain zokik lo, I'm not responsible to relight it. The mitzvah is the lighting, as long as everything was set up properly, if it goes out, I've fulfilled my obligation. Beis Levi is bothered. Why is this? We should still have to relight the menorah, because there's another halacha in Hanukkah of chashad, of being suspect, meaning if somebody has two doors, this is the times of the Gemara where they lit outside their house. If you have two doors, let's say on an L-shaped house, one door faces one side of Shus Rab and one door faces the other side over here, so people walking this way, if you don't light a menorah over here, people think you're not keeping Hanukkah this year. And people walking this way will say, if you're not lighting a menorah over here, they think you're not keeping Hanukkah this year, because everyone's just going on their street. So the Gemara says if you have two doors that open on both sides of this situation, you have to light menorahs on both sides. Chashad. People shouldn't suspect you that you're not lighting menorah. That's the din of the Gemara, and it's codified in Shulchan Aruch as well. Says the Beis Levi, if we see by Hanukkah there's this idea of chashad, that we have to make sure you're lighting the menorah in a way where people shouldn't suspect you that you didn't light the menorah, so why is it if the candles go out, they don't have to relight it? You should have to relight the menorah. And therefore, the Beis Levi suggests that really you do have to relight it, and all that kufsa ein zokik lo means, this halacha, that if it goes out, you don't have to relight it, is that technically in the halacha of Ner Chanukah, you fulfilled your obligation. But the next level of being worried for a cheshad, for being concerned that people are going to suspect you didn't light the menorah properly, you should have to relight it. And he leaves off with the tzarachi and leaves off with the question on the poskim why they don't bring this halacha. So again, according to the Beis Halevi, a new chumra for this year, if your candles go out within the time that they have to be lit, then the first half hour, according to Beis Halevi, you would have to relight it. In a similar, without a bracha, correct. In a similar vein, in source 15 on page 7, the Shari Tshuva, which is on the Shulchan Aruch, quotes from a Tshuva's Shavus Yaakov, which is an Achron as well. He was bothered with this question as well, and he doesn't go as far as the Beis Levi to say you have to relight the menorah. He just says that you should make sure to leave your menorah in public view, the cups and the oil and the wicks there, and if you don't relight it, so people can see that you lit it, there was a menorah there, and for whatever reason it went out, and you didn't relight it, because Allah is, you're not obligated to relight it. But you shouldn't clean up your menorah right away, because then people might suspect you. So he's similar to the Beis Levi in that the fact he's concerned that we should make sure people don't suspect you of not lighting the menorah, but he doesn't actually make you relight it. He just suffices if you leave the menorah as is with the candles or the oil cups and the wicks in place.
What's the source for this chashad business?
Chashad is a Gemara, and it's in Shulchan Aruch as well, that a person has to light and make sure, in the case, let's say, the house of two doors, to make sure that people both ways see it. Nowadays, we light indoors, so it's machlokas aposkim. We can't discuss everything all right now, whether or not we have to be concerned for this as well, but in Eretz Yisrael, where many people still have the custom to light outside, this would be more relevant. The sixth topic I'd like to briefly discuss, as we're time the clock is working against us, is in Source 16. We're all familiar with what we brought up shortly before about the halacha of a shamish. We light whatever night we're up to, the third night of Hanukkah, we light three candles and one extra candle for a shamish. The point of the shamish, as we know, the poskim tell us, the Gemara tells us, is that since it's forbidden to get hana, any benefit from the Hanukkah candles, we can't use it for personal benefit, we light a shamish, another helper candle, so that if we want to get any benefit from the candles, we're not getting it from the Hanukkah candles, rather we're getting it from the shamish. The obvious question here is, who are we fooling? The first night, okay, it's not so bad. You have one candle, one shamish. But let's fast forward to the fourth night for a minute. You have four candles, and you have one measly shamish. So I say, well, it's a good thing I lit the shamish, because this way if I'm sitting in my living room and I want to read the newspaper, I have the shamish on. Hello, you're getting so much light from the four other candles. You're benefiting so much from the Hanukkah candles. How can it be that one shamish will suffice to, so to speak, take care of this problem of using the shamish candle? This question was asked by Halachas Ketanis, which is a early Achron, quoted by the Shari Tshuva in Source 16 in the Shulchan Aruch. So he's bothered by his question. He gives certain answers. I don't have time to discuss them right now. But in Source 17, it's from the students of Ramosha Feinstein Zatzal. They suggest, although Moshe Feinstein never said this, but they suggest that Moshe Feinstein held this to be a problem, and therefore Moshe Feinstein was careful to always leave the electric lights on in his room. Let's say he lit in his, wherever he lit, in his living room, wherever it was, he always made sure to leave those lights on, so in case he was sitting in the room afterwards, and he wouldn't get any benefit at all from the Hanukkah candles. He's getting benefit from the fluorescent or whatever incandescent bulbs or his before LED lights or whatever lights he had in his house. He would be getting benefit from them and would avoid to get any benefit at all from the shamish. In a similar vein, in source 18 and 19 from the Ben Ishchai and from the Sefer Kav HaYashar, they discuss at length Api Kabbalah. There are some very serious concerns if a person gets benefit even from the shamish light, or at least benefit in a way of degrading, meaning if someone's going to read something not Jewish oriented, or the Kav HaYashar talks about someone's playing cards and someone's playing cards by light, even by light of the shamish, will be inappropriate. So they're discussing here the not just not getting benefit from the Hanukkah candles, but doing anything degrading, anything out of bezayon, even by light of the shamish, will be a problem. Pi Kabbalah, speak to local Orthodox Kabbalists for understand this halacha. I'm just telling you what it says here, that Api Kabbalah, it's a problem. Two last points I want to wrap up with. That idea number seven is the famous minhag that all the children often remind the parents of before Hanukkah, is the chiv of Hanukkah gelt, of Hanukkah, to give Hanukkah money. I'm not talking about the choker coins, we're talking about real money. So what is the source for this minhag? So some say that this doesn't need a source. This is minhag Yisrael Tairi, all customs don't have to have a source. This is the way it always was, and we have to keep it. But Rav Dava Cohen Shlita from Brooklyn in his Sefer suggests two sources for this custom. Number one, he says that the Magen Avraham in the Shulchan Aruch, in the beginning of Hilchas Chanukah, brings down that the young people who were poor, the minhag was during the beginning of Chanukah, they would go around collecting by the doors in order that they have sufficient funds for whatever they needed for Chanukah. So he says, in order not to embarrass anybody who doesn't have money, we now, the minhag became, we proactively go ahead and give out extra money on Chanukah, so in order that to people shouldn't have to feel embarrassed to come ask. So we're proactively avoiding that by making sure our children or anybody has adequate funds for Chanukah. That's one suggestion, he says. Further, he says, it's just like we know before Pesach, the minhag is we give out Mo'is Chitim, and that to make sure people have sufficient money to buy what they need for Pesach. The idea of Pesach as well as the Pirsum Hanes, the four cups of wine we drink by the Pesach Seder, and the matzahs to remember the whole story of Yetzias Mitzrayim. So too now, when it comes to Chanukah, the idea of Pirsum Hanes, we want to make sure everyone has what they need. It's a similar idea. We want to make sure everyone has what they need for Pirsum Hanes. We should make sure to be lavish and give out people the money that they need in order everyone could have sufficient funds for whatever they need for Chanukah. Based on these two sources, it would seem that it's more appropriate to give money than presents, but we know everybody, every family can follow their own custom. One last point I want to end off with, the eighth point, I didn't put down the sources here, ran out of space already. The eighth idea would be connected to the eighth day of Chanukah. The eighth day of Chanukah is often referred to in Svarim as Zeis Chanukah. As we lane, that's the last day of Chanukah, and we lane the, that's the way the laning begins as well on the eighth day of Chanukah. So the Svarim HaKadoshim all speak about this idea of Zeis Chanukah, it's a heilig day. And they're very busy trying to find what's the source that Zeis Chanukah is so heilig, that it's like the Chasima, it's like the end of the whole Yom Noroim period ends by Chanukah. So first I want to share a cute story I saw once. There was a simple Chasidish Yid who lived in a shtetl somewhere. And he would always, every year, davening Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, he was always bothered. The Chazan singing in the Nesan HaTaykif, and he's doing such a beautiful job, and he's saying all the words, and all of a sudden he says, Oymi b'chanika. And he's always worried, what does Chanukah have to do with davening and Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur? He never understood why all of a sudden, in the middle of an Asana Taikif, the Chazan sing Oymi b'chanika. What does Chanukah have to do with anything about Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur? Until one year he went to the Rebbe's Tish on Chanukah, and he heard the Rebbe dashing about Zois, Chanukah, how the Heilige Tug for Chanukah is the Chasima from Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, and he said, oh, he goes up to the Rebbe and he says, now I understand why in the Sana Taika we say Umi Bechanika. All right, that's the Chassidish story. But I saw if we brought down the name of Yosef Chaim Zonnefeld, who is not particularly Chassidish. He brings down a source for this. The idea is that the Gemara, the end of Baba Kama, those who just learned Daf Yomi, end of Baba Kama, the Gemara there tells us that if a person, there's a malva and a loiva, a lender and a borrower, and if the lender comes to the borrower and says, where's the cash, pay up, and he says, I'm out of money, and they go to Bezdin says, you have 90 days to pay up. After 90 days, they write a shtar, which is called the Adrachta Anichsaya, that now the lender is allowed to go down to the estate of the borrower and extract anything which he could get, any collateral he can get as payment for his loan. So you see from this Gemara, says Rav Yosef Chaim Zonnefeld, that 90 days from the Din Torah is how long Bezin will give for a person to pay up. Rosh Hashanah is 90 days before Zayis Chanukah. Zayis Chanukah is 9 days from Rosh Hashanah. So we are Kadosh Baruch Hu, so to speak, is giving us the 90 days we have now to ship up and shape up, I should say, to fix ourselves up in these 90 days. And this is the Zayis Chanukah will be the culmination of Rosh Hashanah. And with that, I want to conclude as well. The Gemara tells us how Ragul Bener, the Gemara in Chaf Gimel Beis in Shabbat tells us that Ragul Bener, someone who's careful with the Neris of Chanukah, Rashi explains, Havilon Bon of Tamid Chacham. So this farm being down as well, then Zayis Chanukah is a particularly specific time for a person to daven for. If he wasn't Zaycha to have children, could be daven that day, or someone who has a family to daven for the success of his family with the Schus of Chanukah, Ragul Bener, he'll have Bon of Tamid Chacham, and we shall be Zaycha to fulfill the days of Chanukah properly and be Zaycha to the area of Mashiach. Let me just turn this off, and then I'll be with you.